accession number 18493, reel 13.
Mr. Arnold Lupton, reel 13.
Yes, if I had been in a tank which brewed up after being hit, then I would probably have felt very scared, and providing I got out of it all right, I would then perhaps have been scared for the rest of my time in the tank corps. I don't know. If you are knocked out in some other way, you have a track blown off or you're shot through the tank, a solid shot, then okay, you don't have time to think about it. You don't have the opportunity to get worried or scared. It happens. You get out as best you can, but brewed up, no, that's a very different thing. I think. It eventually means, possibly, that you would not like to go back into the tank again.
Is this fear of brewing up, is this a sort of general thing, or is this more particular to you?
No, I would say that was a general thing. I would think anybody would be like that, to have a fire going around you, and a very concentrated fire, as it would have been with petrol in the engine, and all the shots around you in the turret as well, which wouldn't make you feel any more comfortable.
And somehow or other you draw a clear distinction between that and the effect of a penetration. I mean, I'm just thinking that you saw what a relatively simple penetration at long range could do in your very first battle, when you hadn't even had the opportunity to fire back.
Yes.
But you still nevertheless drew a distinction, did you, between that kind of danger and a fire?
Yes, I did. The fire is, I don't know, it's horrific. It's the idea of fire anyway, to any living thing, I think, is. And it's something that is dreaded by anything, I think. And I think that would have really sort of shocked the innards out of you if you survived it.
Was this a just basic thing with you, or did you have any particular reason to fear brew-ups? I mean, did you know someone who had been in a brew-up, or had lost some friends?
Yes, I did. We had a few. During the period we were at war, and it really was something terrible. Even if they got out, they would be maimed in some way, pretty horrible, as a result of the fire, not because of anything exploding or anything like that, just fire.
Talking about how you feel about going into battle and so on, did it get harder or easier as it went on?
Well, I think in a way it got easier, because you did have some idea of what was going to happen next time, subject to demolition anyway, but I mean, providing you got through it one way or the other, it didn't mean that you could do better next time. It just meant that you knew more or less what could happen. If it was just a simple, if you accidentally were hit, or you had to stop the battle then you had an idea of what it would be like or could be like.
Was there any sense at all that the longer you were in it, that was it a case of the more likely you were to get through or the less likely? In other words, I mean, was there a feeling that maybe your luck might be running out?
You never knew when your luck might run out. But the thing is that when you went into a battle, the main thing you were concerned with, of course, was getting through it yourself, coming out at the other end whenever it finished as one person alive, and doing as much damage as you could to the other people, the Germans, Italians, whoever it was, and yes, it was just a question of you didn't have time to think, could my luck be running out? If it happened, it happened.
Yeah, that was during the battle. I can see that. But was, how about sort of in the periods outside? When you were at rest, was it was that when you sort of maybe mulled over chances? And
yes, you might do, but generally you didn't really have a great deal of time for that. You may do when you're in bed, but more often than not, you, from what you were doing, you were so tired you were glad to get to bed and get to sleep, but otherwise you didn't really have either the time to think about it or sometimes possibly the mentality to think about that, because you were chatting to friends and you were chatting about anything except the war generally, and you just didn't think about it. Well, if you did think about it, I can't remember doing so specifically. I mean, if you were alive tomorrow, okay, that's a good thing. If you weren't, well, too bad, something had happened. That was the only way you could look at it.
Was this not talking about the war and your chances and things like this? Was this a sort of, was this conscious? I mean, did you consciously decide not to talk about it, or did it just happen that way?
No, really, it happened that way. You just didn't, because, well, it was there all around you, and you didn't want to sort of go over it again, like playing a bridge hand and replaying it and so on. You just sort of blotted that out and talked about any rubbish that comes to mind, as so often happens. Nothing to do necessarily with the war. Not our war, anyway.
What about casualties? Friends and acquaintances, particularly within your troop or your squadron that you knew, obviously. How were they dealt with? How were they discussed or not?
Well, it was a funny thing. As it was liable to happen sort of any day to anyone, perhaps in most cases you mentioned it amongst friends perhaps for a day or two or three, not in detail, just poor Max or something like that, pity I miss him. And then it seemed to go out of the, whether out of mind perhaps, but certainly out of the conversation, because it was liable to happen any time to anyone. So I think you didn't want to dwell on it too much as to what had happened to them.
About dealing with fear, I mean, you say that you dealt with it, but perhaps some others didn't. Do you have any particular recollection of anyone who sort of cracked under the strain?
No, I can't think of any specifically. From what I remember, all of our tank crews, so long as they were in crews, continued the same people in not necessarily the same tanks. They may have gone with a different driver next time or something like that, but generally I don't remember anybody cracking up and giving up. And of course when we got new replacement people from time to time, they soon seemed to bed in with the things that were going on and to carry on the same way. I don't remember any of them specifically cracking up, giving up.
Well, how about nearly doing so? I mean, I'm thinking of really getting the jitters and maybe just needing a break. I mean, did that happen that you were aware of?
No. When we were not on leave, let's say, when we were up in the action area, people seemed to just carry on. All you were looking forward to was the next spell of leave. There'd only be a few days, perhaps, go to some place in Cairo or Alexandria, somewhere like that, and relax, forget about it. No, I can't think of anybody who needed to go back for recuperation or whatever you like to call it, relaxation.
You were saying about crews and working together in groups. How much of an entity was a particular tank crew?
Well, it was an entity insofar as four or five people on one tank in very close proximity, in hazardous conditions very often. You had to work as an efficient team, and very efficient team. You had to get on to be able to do that. You had to get on with each member of the crew and with the officer or whoever may be in charge of the crew. You had to be able to get on, and each man to do what he was instructed or what he felt he should do during the action, to be able to do that automatically without any hesitation. So it was you depended on each other.
Yes, what I was getting at there was you were saying that sometimes people swapped around between crews. I'm just wondering how frequent that was.
Oh, it wasn't a frequent thing. You would be with the same people who sometimes it may be months on end, depended on the circumstances, or possibly if you changed from, say, an A9 or an A13 to an A10 with extra crew on it, then you would meet up with some extra people. If you went back to one from six crew down to four crew, then you would again change the group, and you would have to learn in a way, for a day or two anyway, learn of any idiosyncrasies or whatever in the different people, the different driver, the different tank commander, different gunner, whatever it was. But generally, everybody seemed to get along very well, whether they were with the same people for months on end or had just changed over.
What about the great square pegs, you know, people that just basically couldn't get on with anybody? Did you have many of those that were sort of passed around from crew to crew until they could find a home?
I think mostly they had been thinned out before that. If they couldn't get on with anybody for some reason or the other, then they'd probably been put down into A or B echelon and go and do something there and annoy somebody there, you know, or whatever. But crews on tanks, I don't know, they seemed to be able to get on together, even if they got moved about. You never got moved about frequently or much, but if you did get moved about, they seemed to be people who were intent on being good crew members and keeping together.
Was there ever any, you know, somebody was a particularly good gunner or a particularly good driver, and maybe some of the officers pulling rank to make sure they got on their tank? Did you have any of that?
I couldn't say that I could recall any of that. I know that as far as I was concerned, I kept particularly with one driver for quite a long time. In the desert, in Burma, quite a few, well, several months. Because I knew I'd known him well since I was at Ringwood, and we'd always got on well together. And we seemed to get on well together also on the tanks. And I don't know, the crew commanders, they may have said, well, I'd like to go with him, but you didn't necessarily hear beforehand that that was the man that they wanted to go to because he had a good record for gunnery or driving or whatever it was, or wireless use, etc. I suppose some of them did say, yes, I would like to go with him, if they got a chance to do so.
You were talking earlier about one of the ways of sort of dealing with the stress was leave.
Yes.
What sort of how much leave did you get? Was there a lot of it, or?
Well, depending on the time when you might have been up in the front line, it'd probably be approximately every 3 months you would get up to 5 days away. That is, as I say, in the North African desert, as down to Cairo or Alexandria. You could either stay in one of the clubs or one of the cheaper hotels or something down there, and you were free to do whatever you wanted for those 5 days, and to make your way back to the train when you had to go back, so that you showed the correct ticket to the RTO and was waiting at the station to wish you bon voyage one way or the other.
So what were the flesh pots of Cairo and Alex? What did they have to offer?
Well, if you were interested in sightseeing, we did occasionally go, well, I say occasionally, only once or twice, I suppose, out to the pyramids just outside Cairo, to the Dead City and various parts like that, to the Heliopolis horse race course, and otherwise, well, you went around the various bars to the nightclubs, which were fairly reasonable, the usual belly dancing and that kind of thing going on, beer supping, of course, and well, that was it. You could also go to the cinema if you wanted, where you would normally be able to see English-speaking films and eat unripe oranges and peanuts and various things like that. You could even go for a swim, if providing you went to the proper swimming pool somewhere. Or if it was winter, you could go and see some of the rugby or other football games which were going on around about between different groups like Kiwis and Springboks and various things like that. You could occupy your time one way or the other. Apart from anything else, of course, you only got up when you had to get up.
That was one of the great attractions, was it?
Yes. You weren't up at 3:30 in the morning or something, going out to dish out some breakfast to the Germans or whatever, or running your tracks around in the dust. It was being able to do what you wanted when you wanted for 5 days.
What about the less licit attractions of these leave periods?
Such as?
I gather, sort of whole areas that were supposed to be out of bounds to British troops.
Was that a great
attraction to many?
Not greatly. If you did get anywhere into or towards one of these areas, you'd probably get a few red caps around to warn you off before you went in. If you did get in, well, you'd probably spend at least one night in jug somewhere, for having done so and having been caught by the military police. But it normally, if you wanted to live a reasonable kind of life, you kept away from such things. Also, in the bars and in the clubs, you tried to keep away from any fights that were going on, but they always seemed to happen anyway. People got tanked up on too much beer or zibib or something, and there was usually somebody causing some strife somewhere. That was just the way of life, I suppose. They were letting off steam there that they possibly had been storing up for months up in the desert.
Sounds deadly stuff. What's zibib?
Zibib is a Hanani's stuff that when you pour water in it goes milky like ouzo in Greece and raki in other parts of the Middle East, Iraq and so on, and it's pretty lethal stuff because you can wake up next morning with a terrible head. Oh, I must have a drink, and you go and have a drink of water, and that knocks you off again. You've still got the alcohol zooming around inside you. I think it just needs a bit more liquid in it. it was a kind of thing. You wanted a change occasionally from the Stella beer or whatever it was, which tasted mainly of onions.
The beer tasted of onions?
Well, that, I remember the Stella Brew, yes, that was a foul stuff. It was cheap, tasted something like beer, was cool. there was always a kind of onion taste in it. They probably mixed it with onions anyway when they brewed it. I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't like onions anyway.
Did you get any English beer deliveries, or was it all local brew?
We occasionally got some delivered to the canteen we had. We did have a canteen in one place for quite a while. It was a sort of one of the big tents which was sunk into the ground until you only had the peak of the tent sticking up, and we had a very good bloke in charge of that, and he had a wonderful assortment of beers in, which came in from, Canada, South Africa, England. Yes, it was quite an enjoyable place to go sometimes when you got a bit of rest time in the evening.
Whereabouts was this? Can you remember?
This was somewhere near Mirza Matru, where we were stationed out there in the desert for, several weeks anyway, which was quite a nice place because at the time we were only doing a bit of training, and we had all our tanks done up. They had a sort of screen over the top of them which made them look like lorries, and especially with the A13s, which had four big wheels, they looked even more like lorries under these canopies, which were only a bit of Hessian that had been painted. And whilst we were there, we used to get down to the sea at, we'd get taken down a lorry load to go down and have an enjoyable swim and play around in the sea at Mirza Matru or somewhere along the coast there. And it really was very enjoyable then.
Can you remember the date of this?
No.
Was it after Battle Axe or before?
No, I think it was it was before that. I think it was before. We didn't go back to the same place to recoup after, but I'm sure, yes, it was before, while we were hanging about getting more tanks brought in, and more men came up to join us too. And relaxing a bit from running about. We occasionally had a run out to go and play around with Germans, a bit of a skirmish somewhere out in the desert. But you would come back to this place in the evening and relax.
Can you remember whether you were involved or whether somebody came in to put these screens and things over your tanks?
We had to mount them up, but they were delivered to us by Remy, I think they were. No, couldn't have been Remy. I don't know who actually made them up. But they were made up so that they fitted onto the tanks, and they were easy to get off, in that you just sort of undid a couple of catches or so right up on the top, and it fell down each side, and you just disconnected it from the places where you had clipped in, so it was easy to become a tank again. Or when you got back in the evening, to make yourself into a lorry again.
You were suggesting this was really a matter of minutes to do this.
Oh, it was really, yes. You got everybody on, the four people on a crew of a Crusader or cruiser, and you got them They could get the thing up just literally in minutes, yes. We had one time, oh, it comes a bit later on anyway. No, I'll go into that in a bit later.
So when you ditched your screens, I mean, did you just leave them on the desert and drive back to the same area at night? Is that how it worked?
Yes, it did really, because from the air they wouldn't be notably showing up as